politics and precious metals, currency and current events, and from Bitcoin to banksters, this is the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show. Now, here are your hosts, Tony Arterburn and Kenzie.
Even on the road, you don't jump on your cue. I have to speak first, always, on this podcast. I can't believe
I'm tweeting us out. I'm getting the tweets sent to the world.
Hey, folks, this is Tony Arterburn. I am one of your hosts of the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show, and this is kind of a special edition of the program. I usually do the Arterburn radio transmission on Fridays live around this time, but Kenzie and I have been talking. There's so much that's happened in the financial sector that's going to affect everything else, and Kenzie's done some magnificent research this week. I have tons of links and things to talk about. So this is going to go out on my podcast for the Arterburn radio transmission and probably even Paratruther. It'll go out on the radio on 9:30 a.m. The Answer a little bit later this evening in San Antonio. So all of the places that my radio show would go out, and I'm going to let those listeners know, we have a podcast, Kenzie and myself, called The Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show. So go find that anywhere podcasts are served up. I think you can also go to goldandcrypto.news for the direct link to the podcast. And it's a fun show. We had a lot of consistent shows for 21, part of 22. And then we got busy with Wolfpack, but we're back and we're making up for lost time. But Kenzie, welcome to your own show. How are you doing? How's the bunker?
I'm nervous.
I noticed that your avatar is a baby Yoda on fire.
Yeah, because I didn't want to go with the usual Elmo. I at least wanted to give you something a little cuter while the world is on fire here.
You didn't want an Elmo?
Yeah, so I went with baby Yoda. I mean, Wall Street's going to need some Jedi mind tricks, you know, coming up. At the moment, it does not look very good. It doesn't. And people kind of know we've got Silicon Valley Bank. We can say that that's going under. Silvergate likely going under. And, you know, luckily, I almost wonder if it's the sacrificial lamb, Tony, because it's really helping boost JP Morgan and, you know, any other bank that's out there. If people needed to move their funds around quickly or had enough time to, it's helping boost the rest of the sector. But will that maintain is kind of the big question. Or are we going to see a domino effect here soon?
Well, that is a great question. I was speaking with my brother yesterday, and he had a Bitcoin ATM business that was a decent size. I mean, had a lot of units. I own some of the Bitcoin ATMs, but they went through Silvergate. They had at one time the people that they purchased Bitcoin from, and we were kind of talking some inside baseball. And I'm guessing, and I don't know the full story, but it's because, and this is, I mean, I feel bad for the Silvergate Bank because I used to wire them to buy Bitcoin direct. And they just happened to kind of get caught up in this FTX bankruptcy deal where they didn't really do anything. They just happened to send out some of the funds, like they released funds for a third party that was associated with FTX. That's the way I understood it. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I think that that's kind of the picture that all of us need to look at is all it takes is a little bit of fear to come in. But people need to realize that the way that banking is done today, even if on the books, on the paper right now, it looks fine. It only takes a little bit of fear in the markets to have this come kind of crashing down, right? Because they have to maintain that liquidity, both in stock price, you know, people willing to move money around with them. And the moment that that kind of becomes stagnant, you're in a very dangerous place. And that's kind of what we saw, I think, with Silicon Valley Bank. It's actually really interesting to hear the mainstream points and the talking heads out there saying, you know, everything should have been fine. Okay, yeah, it should have been when times are great. And if there's never going to be any issues, sure, you're fine. You can continue to run the circus. But somebody came in and turned the lights out. People got scared. Someone ran fire and we're all running for an exit. So like this could cause other bank runs if people were fearful enough and they don't maintain confidence.
Yeah. And it's kind of like if you go back to 2008 and I was 28 at the time and I've told this story a bunch. I had a convenience store I knew and I was in real estate. I was it was high volume convenience stores, you know, through the family business. And it was running like, you know, 200,000 to 300,000 gallons a month. And the price kept going up and up and up. There started to be issues with getting credit lines and things released. And that's when I noticed the cracks in the system. It was harder and harder to float. It was harder and harder to stretch out invoices, like, because it started to tighten. Everything started to tighten with the increase of price, even though there was more dollars being put into accounts. And I was like, there's something wrong here. And I was noticing, like, in my real estate side of business, that there was less and less ability to get loans. But this is before, you know, the crash happened. This is before, like, the September, October, the TARP funds and Hank Paulson going to supposedly. This was something I noticed, and I started to pull back. But at the same time, a lot of people don't, I mean, if they don't pay attention to that sector of politics or finance, everybody in the mainstream was saying everything was okay.
Yes.
They're like, no, it's fine. You know, and just go out. And, like, even the financial radio networks in Dallas at the time were like, no, it's, this is all that doom and gloom is just hype and people trying to sell you books. And I thought, I don't think so. I think there's something really wrong. And, you know, I don't think we've seen the fallout from FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I know it's Fried or whatever, but it sounds like it's like the Bernie Madoff of our time. And so, like, all these things that you and I talk about, I'm like, I just think people with the sanctions on Russia, the BRICS nations, all of this is going to culminate in a liquidity crisis, because we have no more tricks left. I mean, what was that intelligence report that me and you read? What was it, about 2 months ago on the show from BlackRock? And they were saying, and look, I don't. You have to take BlackRock with a grain of salt. I understand that, and I don't put a lot of trust in them, obviously. But they, you know, so most of the time, banks, especially the mega banks, have the best intelligence, because they really, it's not a lot of separations between the banks and the intelligence communities themselves. And what they came up with was that nothing that's worked in the past is going to work now, when it comes to the market bailout. So, like, what happened in 2008 with the injection of funds from the Federal Reserve? And we all remember what happened then, which this, as soon as they did that, gold and silver started to climb, and it culminated in gold's, at that time, all time high in 2011 with $2,000 gold, or right at 2000. Same thing with silver. Silver went back up and matched, I believe it matched its high of 1980 at $50. But the Fed then stepped back and said, well, we won't do this anymore. We're really sorry. We had to bail these things out. We're going to start quantitative tightening. You know, we're going to raise rates a little bit. So all that, there's going to be a contraction in the money supply. So don't run to gold. Don't run to silver. Don't run to assets. Get back in the markets. You know, it's kind of like George W. Bush said after 9/11, get down to Disney World. You know, that was his thing. It's like, keep spending. And I think that's, we're in this cycle. And what did we title today's show? Binging banks on the brink of bust. Something like that.
And that's what we have kind of going on. And it's not all of it is 100% the banks either. It is, because you have to be willing to give them the money for them to do stupid things with it, right? This is kind of like going into the casino and handing some guy in a nice suit all of your money that you brought into it. And you're like, all right, gamble this for me, because you saw him doing well somewhere. And then he comes back out of the room, you know, MVP spot. And he's like, well, we lost it. I'm sorry. That's how much trust we're putting into the banks. But as of today, and I think a lot of people saw this coming yesterday, regulators did close Silicon Valley Bank. The FDIC has now kind of taken that over. And this is kind of another one of those sections, Tony, or a point that we should make, that, hey, FDIC can't protect everything. You know, somebody might have $5 million or more wrapped up into Silicon Valley Bank. And what's the most you're going to get? Your $250K? Cool. Right. That's, you know, that's kind of a place to be. And the FDIC actually did release a statement today on that, if people wanted to go and look into it. It was released just a couple of hours ago. But this is the country's 16th largest bank. And this could roll over into some other sectors. So that's kind of the unsettling part there. It became the largest bank to fail since Seattle, Washington's bull. what is this, during the height of 2008. I don't think anything's really failed since then, unless it's just been a tiny spot, but it's not good to see the big boys going under.
Yeah, and this is something that you'll never really know the extent of the damage in the public, because the mainstream is never going to talk about how bad things actually are because they're mouthpieces for the establishment. And I you know, this story ran on 60 Minutes. I've said this before too, but it's worth repeating. After the first, you know, the Great Recession, 2008, 2009, into 2010 and 11, there were teams of FDIC agents who were going to your banks all over the country, banks that had failed, even larger banks and mid-sized banks. And what they would do, Kinsey, and I know you've talked about this before, but what they would do is they would go and they would fire everybody. Buddy, look, we're going to have to let you go. The agents would assume the uniforms of the people that, you know, and put on the name tags and everything. And then the bank would open the next day, but that bank was absorbed by the FDIC.
That is what is. I think that that's exactly what's happening with this bank right now, because they're smaller sections that are in. I think they've got like 16 locations or something. They'll be closed until a certain date. It's literally just like 3 days away. I think March 13th or sometime they'll open back up. They gave a date for it. I'm not positive on what that was, but I thought to myself, are they going to have the FDIC agents or those workers come in and try to maintain? I'm really not even sure if they can, because how much, you know, physical cash do you have on hand? I don't.
It's hard to,
know
it's hard to say. Think. Hard to say what they'll do again. I mean, we're not dealing with the same country, because you're talking about different financial pressures, especially after the COVID 1984.
They sold was it 1.8 or it might have been up to $8 billion in like treasuries or bonds or something, and they still are tanking, Tony, even after selling their own stock and then selling other assets that they have outside of their company. It's not enough. They sold more than what they made last year to try to maintain yesterday, and it's still crashing. But that's scary to the people, right? That's a scary
thing. Yeah, and a lot of people don't realize, I mean, how much fake is everything's built into this system. I mean, obviously, if everything in our economy, even our society, is an extension of fake money, because it enhances and enriches people that probably never would make it in a true free market with consequences. You get fake news, fake politicians, fake wars, all of this. And then you get fake companies. And Ron Paul put out a great article I read on the David Knight Show on LouRockwell.com about how big tech is suffering so badly because, you know, after 2008, 2009, there was just this massive amount of cash dumped in and people were looking for places to put it. And they put it into tech and it was overbuilt. And then a great example of that was like Carvana. It had an $80 billion valuation. It's dropped now in the last year to $1.5 billion. So let me say that again. $80 billion to $1.5 billion. That is so shocking. And that's not the only kind of, it was just an example that Ron Paul used. The entire system, the stock market system, is built around fake. All the infrastructure is fake. So you're watching this thing, and I'm like just backing up. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. Like, I don't want to be a part of this, but this is going to affect everything else. It's going to affect Main Street much more, even so than I think Wall Street will be affected.
It because will. Just, it,
yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it, you know, it did last time too, because a lot of people, you saw some banks go under, you saw some people walk away in handcuffs. I have the question of how many people got promoted. You know, while you lost your job and you were wondering how you're going to feed your kids, somebody that caused that mess got a promotion.
That's well, it's the a telltale sign, you know, that something's like, how many people got fired for 9/11? None. How many people got fired or went to jail for the Wall Street crash of 2008, 2009? None. What is that? What's the lesson there? You know what? The audience can decide for themselves. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, that means there's some complicity from the establishment inside those events. And like there's something going on with our financial system that I think is, again, I go back to that BlackRock intelligence report, and we're going to get into some stories here in a second, ladies and gents, but nothing that has been in the past is going to work in the future. And that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, not at all. It does not help that, like, as all of this is happening, Tony, we decided to watch a movie the other night. I forget what it was called, but basically the financial sector went down. These people end up going and having to be in a bunker somewhere with their creepy neighbors. But either way, as this is happening, like, they're seeing it on the news. The husband of the household is like, oh, wow, you know, the largest bank and whatever just went under. And like the sister-in-law behind him is like, oh, well, you know, not my money, not my problem. And that's a lot of people's thought is, I'm not tied to Wall Street. This doesn't hurt me, but it does. Like, where is your job today? Who pays your paycheck? And if credit gets super tied up and it's not very flexible, you are also in a not good position. So I wouldn't think to yourself, oh, just because I don't put on a suit and go to Wall Street, that this doesn't concern me. This very much so does concern your everyday life. And that is not the way to look at this as you see it coming down.
No, I agree with that. And it's, that you're the slayer and destroyer of normalcy bias, as always, here on the Wise Wolf Golden Crypto Show. Hey, Kenz, I'm going to pull up an article. Do you want to talk about the Perth Mint? Because that was a huge story. And then I'm going to pull the article up, and what I want to do now, I can't, again, this is where I'm on the road. I'm in our Denison location, in setting this up. So we have a hub for people to drop off in this region. So if you want to sell us product or pick up product here at the Main Street Mall in Denison, Texas, my mom, I'm in actually in her office right now. She's out of town, but I'm using her office here at the Main Street Mall. Kenzie, let me get up and get, I've got some printed articles, but can you take this article and just kind of start us off, or you can go to the chat. Just give me 2 minutes because I need to grab some stuff that I printed off earlier. I'm not in my usual office, ladies and gents. I'll be right back. So hold on.
Yeah,
you can take it from here.
All right. So moving on to the Perth Mint scandal here. This is one that doesn't make anybody feel too great. Perth Mint actually sold diluted gold to China. They did get caught and they tried to cover it up. So the real question here might kind of be, how long was it going on? They're potentially facing a $9 billion recall on gold bars after it sold diluted or doped bullion to China and then covering it up, according to a leaked internal report. And they started doing this, apparently. The Mint itself has said that it was a cost-saving measure. That's not good. So it did remain above the 99.99% requirement, but it exceeded the amount allowable in Shanghai somewhere. So there's a lot of digging to do within this. And I would assume that the bars that they were selling aren't the normal kinds of bars that we go in and buy in a shop today. I'm assuming we're talking about kilo and 100-ounce bars that are being moved around here to be melted down. And before China would have turned those bars into anything, like, the only reason they got caught is because everything gets tested along the way. Now, there is a concern here and something that I want to point out, because this did happen during the last financial crisis. And more so, I think, with silver than with gold, but things were moving so quickly that there were many companies that didn't quite have time to test. So everything that you get, I think that everyone should at least have a chemical test at home. You know, this is not the first time. I'm sure it won't be the last. I don't think that any of this actually made it to retail markets, but it is a concern and something that we should keep our eyes out on. And we are talking about the Perth Mint, one of the largest mints in the world. So it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I was really going to read just some excerpts from the article. I mean, it's shocking.
Oh, yeah.
The historic Perth Mint is facing a potential $9 billion recall of gold bars after selling diluted or doped bullion to China and then covering it up, according to leaked internal report. And then the key points from the article are, the Mint started doping, and this is in quotations, doping its gold as a cost-saving measure. When it got caught for some of its gold dipping below Shanghai Gold Exchange standards, it kept it quiet. While the gold remained above the 9.999% requirement, it exceeded the amount of allowable silver. And so they're putting a little bit of, that's like known as the Electra. You know, that's the old mint. That's the first gold coin was from Lydia. And that's how they made it. They would, because there is like a natural occurring mixture of gold and silver sometimes in nature. And they would just, you can't, you know, obviously you can't replicate that, but they just made a lot of, you know, they mixed the silver with the gold. And that was known as that was the first bimetallic coin or first real gold coin. So yeah, there's a little tiny, you find that in jewelry a lot. I found that in jewelry a lot, especially like if you get in like the 14 or, you know, 12K range where there's a lot of custom stuff, they put a lot of silver in those things. But that's, so the Perth Mint was doing it in just a fraction of a fraction, but it still wasn't, you know, I read the, it was still four nines, but not quite. Like it just had a little bit extra in there. So yeah, that's a shocking story. Because there's a lot of people that house their wealth with the Perth Mint. I mean, down in Australia.
Well, and that's the scariest part is it's your unallocated stored wealth that you can't just go pick up or ask for at any time because they might not have it. That's kind of another thing is don't keep something anywhere that's unallocated. You should be able to receive that gold or silver that you hold anywhere at any time. And not them go, oh, we're going to have to look into things and you'll probably get it in about 3 months or we can give you your fiat for it. No. I want the metal, not my fiat. That's the whole point in this. I did want to say, though, that the where is this at? Because it even says it in this article. So this is the only mint in the world that has a government guarantee.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And something else that I wanted to point out, Tony, just because we're dealing with the larger people in this space, LBMA bars, things that are eligible for the COMEX. I often wonder how often are COMEX bars possibly doped here and there, you know, for the cost saving. It's not something that gets checked into very often. You would really hope that this isn't happening. But if your country is buying this kind of stuff or it's being held, and we're talking about paper markets at this point, let's say that all of the gold looks like it is sitting there. All the silver does look like it's sitting there. What if we all go to sell or melt down one day and then you find out that it's not as pure as it was supposed to be? That's a huge fear that I have.
I think that's a big supplier problem as opposed to what we do, which we use like small to medium range wholesalers.
Yeah.
And those things get checked way more thoroughly. And I'll just give you an example. Like, you know, we use Dillon Gauge. If there was any possibility with it, something coming out of those, because it's going to get checked at, you know, a certain place like the IRAs that we do, or just sending them to individuals, you're going to get a pushback. There's going to be an alarm that goes off if there's any product that ever goes out that's not 1,000%. I mean, and that's, again, that's why we inspect everything as well. But I just know from the places that I buy, they're excellent. You know, I've bought a lot of product from Dillon Gauge, and we have other wholesalers that we use, but I'm thinking those guys have always been great. And I know I trust their products because, again, they're not so large that they're doing these kind of deals with like the Shanghai Exchange or something.
Yeah.
You know, and
no,
right.
They're the person that comes way further down the line versus all of that, because we're talking about just huge bars that the average person can't buy anyway. And sometimes these exchanges even take those that are called wax bars. Typically a refiner would have got it before someone else. But wax bars are just a, you know, it could be a 10 carat, 8 carat, giant gold bar, and it's got to be refined down because this came from jewelry or wherever. And this is another reason, because I know people hate their high premium stuff, or you think that it's high premium. With what we're about to talk about later, you're going to go, huh, maybe I shouldn't be so concerned with premium. I really like things that are in assay, or like the Valcambi bars that we buy and break down for Wolfpack and things like this. And those mini mintage items, those half gram pieces of gold, Tony, that are going out this month. I really like this kind of stuff because on the retail level, once it's coming to your home, I don't want the people to be scared about this as, oh no, everything in my home could have a problem. No. in the facilities that your stuff is minted from, in a majority of them, especially things that are in assay, or you're talking about these larger names that are out there, there is literally a camera over so many different parts, even the packing, for example. And it's tested so many different times, like literally as it's coming out of this machine or as people are making it, it is being tested. If there's an issue, it immediately goes back. It does not move further on down the line. And it's just weird how many cameras and pictures are being taken throughout this whole process. It's actually a really neat thing to look into if you wanted to. I just don't think anybody should be too overly concerned about what's in your household unless you're meeting some sketchy guy on Facebook or buying through some weird marketplace. I'm not saying that you can't get a deal. You just do need to be cautious. If he's selling it to you $2 under spot, it's not real.
I know. And it's, I feel bad for bit. Every time, and we had some really sophisticated knockoffs that came in about 2 weeks ago. And young lady that works at the Wise Wolf location in Branson brought them to my, I was in the back in my desk, and she's like, I don't know what to make of these, because she put them on the tester and they came back nothing, but they looked like Sunshine silver bars. And I looked at them for a second, put them in my hand, and I go, that's not real. And it's just the way that it felt, or the heavy, this, the weight of it. I don't know the balance of it. I just knew something was off with it. But the guy was like, oh, I bought, you know, $1,500 worth of these, because I got them for, you know, $3-4 under spot. And I said, that's the problem. People looking for bargains instead of just going and getting good product from a good dealer. And this isn't an infomercial, but that's how you get burned. Like the people that come in and show me fake gold bars or fake gold coins. I'm like, yeah, where did you get this? Oh, well, I saw it online for, you know, it was only $1,000 for this gold bar. I'm thinking, well, that's why you got burned. You know, if you want to get gold, you got to find somebody reputable to deal with. And I like those medium to small size vendors better than anything. And that's, you know, Perth Mint. I've even bought some bars from the Perth Mint. I don't think that's affected in any of this stuff. With the Shanghai deal. This is like bulk stuff. This is like insider stuff. But, you know, Perth Mint also had a story that somebody sent me on Twitter, Kinsey. And it was like, I was trying to figure out what to make of it. And it was like the Perth Mint's under investigation, and I should have pulled this up morning, but it's like Perth Mint was under investigation because it sold $34,000 worth of gold to somebody with no questions asked. And I'm like, well, we do that. We sell, if you have money, we'll sell you gold. I mean, what does it matter? As long as it's not over $10,000 in cash, I mean, you can wire us whatever amount you want. I'm like, I think that's probably, that somebody was saying this is probably the future where they scrutinize gold and silver dealers, you know, and just say, well, you're not supposed to sell to X. Why didn't you do a background investigation? Like, that is so ridiculous. Like, if you have money and you have an address and you have a card and it checks out, yeah, we're going to sell you things. But
I know that there's at least one bank out there that doesn't really like us very much. And I'm sure that they try to pull the whole security thing or whatever it might be. But that's going to be the easiest way to draw people away. And whether it be by their card, a wire, ACH, I'm not really sure, but that's the scary part too, is your bank has like so much control over what you can and can't move your money to.
I don't know. Is the bank, does the bank rhyme with Tells Targo?
It does. It sure does.
They don't like me.
Anytime there's like a real issue with payment, and then you go and investigate it, you're like, oh man, it's not that someone is trying to rip us off or something like that. It's just that Tails Targo is not our, they don't really like us very much, Tony.
They really don't. I've noticed that many times from customers. There's something with Wise Wolf, and we use the Bank of Missouri, which I really like. They've been real good to me. So shout out to the Bank of Missouri. If you're in Missouri, it's a good bank. They've not given me any issue with my gold and silver business. Knock on my mom's wooden desk here in Denison. we got about 26 minutes or so left. Let's jump into some other articles. What did you want to talk about? You want to go to the FDIC? What? You want to go to Powell?
Let's go to Powell, because I kind of covered, people can go find that thing themselves. Let's go over to Powell.
This is an article up on CNBC. This is, in just a few minutes this week, Powell, Jerome Powell, Fed chairman, changed everything on the market's view of interest rates. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell set out a new paradigm for how the central bank views its policy path, one that apparently will see even higher interest rates for a longer period of time. Markets now strongly expect a half point increase in March, and the peak or terminal rate will hit close to 5.75 before the Fed finishes out. What changed was the January inflation data, plus signs that the labor market remains remarkably strong despite the Fed's efforts to slow it down.
We've got a really long double-edged sword right in front of us. So the interesting thing here is the fact that the mainstream media goes, oh, the labor market is so strong, everything's so great, it's so great, it's so great. This is why inflation remains high. That and all of the funny money that is going out there. And people have a right to demand to be paid more. It does make sense that a lot of the jobs that you can get today don't quite keep up with the cost of owning your home. That does make sense. But during this meeting, people can go and find this, find the full video of it. I think that the, the congressman from Louisiana, I think, was asking questions on this. Powell did admit that if they want to reach their inflation target, which I think is around that 2 to 3% zone, there is a formula that goes into this. We're going to have to reach an unemployment rate of 10%. 10% is, whenever we were talking earlier about banks tightening up on credit, I can promise you it's coming way sooner than that 10% target. And if we're just trying to be really conservative here, we're still talking about a 6 to 7% unemployment rate. And that will not get inflation down to where you would like it to be. This is a very bad spot to be in, and Wall Street needs a magic wand. Somebody needs a magic wand. Just an ADHD thought here. Another tidbit is, be very careful if we really start to see the in the Fed movement really grow. That would be fantastic, but where are they leading you to? All right. Even if we decided to end the Fed once this is all said and done, and I'm talking about a time period over the next, 3 to 10 years, maybe sooner. If we ended the Fed, what is the beast that arises next? We got to be so careful with what's about to happen. And if we're at, 5 to 10% unemployment, it's never been, it hasn't been like that since 1982. 1982 is when we hit 10.8%. That is very bad. And this was in the era, in case people don't quite remember. So we're talking about Nixon, Jimmy Carter, and I guess Ronald Reagan. Like, we're kind of in this period. I think inflation rates were still pretty high for all of that sector, in case people don't quite remember, just by dates. But it was a bumpy time for the US. And this is also the period, you really started to see silver spiking in the mid 70s. Like, you got a huge bump up. And what is this? In 1980, it says it was $137 an ounce. I'm not sure if it was truly trading for that, but this is the highest that silver's ever been. And it didn't quite come back down until the 90s is whenever.
Well, that may be, I don't know that it ever hit like a tradable amount at that, but I do know that it surpassed $50 an ounce in 1980. Now, you have to realize that $50 in 1980 is like $200+ today in purchasing power, at least. Yeah. So we know that. And the reason that people get confused about the 70s, I think, and I'm not an expert. I just study history. So one of the things I look at, Nixon takes us off the gold standard in 71, just untethers the dollar. That's when we create the petrodollar system. And gold just starts to climb. And throughout the 70s, it dips a couple of times, but it culminates in 1979. Getting close to $800-$900 an ounce in 1980. Now, again, we go back and we talk about this, but it's not so much that gold went up. It's that the dollar lost purchasing power. That's where you had the massive inflation of the 1970s. Silver followed with gold, as it historically usually does. And we'd taken the silver out of our coinage starting in 1965 and debasing it, mainly so we could inflate the money supply. Again, Nixon knew the game was up. I mean, the other countries knew it. So they started, trying to turn their dollars and get to the gold window. He shut the gold window down. So I think, what we're watching here in with the Fed and their moves, people are misreading this. In my opinion, and we've talked about this before, I mentioned this on the David Knight show too. I think they raise rates. And they, again, Powell has raised rates faster than anyone else in history. And it doesn't seem that way because we're only in like the 5% territory. But, Paul Volcker, the head of the Fed in the 1970s, they raised interest rates to the teens, which people don't, I mean, that would be shocking today to see 13% interest rates
it's
on a mortgage.
It's because they could do that then. And
it was a different world. You had the total debt of the U.S. was $1 trillion. China had not come online yet. That there was not globalism in the way that we have it today because the Soviet Union held about half the world hostage in the communist sphere. So there wasn't all these new markets opened up and we hadn't had NAFTA yet. There was a totally, totally different country. So when I'm telling people today, this is my opinion, but they're saving the dollar or trying to keep the dollar the world's reserve currency by keeping it strong, keeping the purchasing power strong. I think they've put the economy secondary. So like I'll read this title to this article again. Listen to this last point. What changed was the January inflation data plus signs that the labor market remains remarkably strong despite the Fed's efforts to slow it down. So they don't want a strong labor market. I mean, a labor market is the health of an economy.
They can't, though. This is why I say it's a double-edged sword. You're either going to get Venezuela or you're going to get a terrible depression. And with what we have set up, I think that you're going to get a bit of both because we have to pick up the pieces after they fall. Banks will have to be so very careful once this comes, whoever's remaining, that is. Whatever's about to happen actually could introduce the UBI. And I'm thinking to myself, at a 10% unemployment rate, this is actually when we could start to see work camps where you are working for housing, you are working for food from the government. They will provide, and they might provide you some sort of safety or security. I don't know about that. If it got to that point, I would just think of the stadiums in Katrina. You had a cot, you had some food, and people turned the other way when some really bad things were going on in there. So, this is the other side of that fear, not just talking from, your normal economic talking points, yada, yada. I'm going to go a bit further and say, hey, UBI can come into play. You're not going to have a place to live. Your kids are going to be looking at you with these giant watery eyes and I don't want you to be in that position. Get your house in order first, right? Limit the amount of debt that you have as much as you can. Depending on how bad this gets, I don't care that you have a 30-year locked mortgage. If there is some kind of super fine print contingency somewhere that none of us have read over until it happens, then we've got a bit of a problem there. And you just might not be able to make the payments. Who says they're going to come and force you out? Like you might not be able to make those payments. That's the reality of it. And what are you going to do at that time? So get your house in order, have food, water, defense, make sure that you're stocked up for your babies and your pets and things like that. Gold, silver, and definitely probably have a little bit of cash on hand too. I don't know how long it'll last if people really wake up and figure out, oh God, this thing is worth nothing. But, the average person perceives that dollar to have some sort of value, and don't hold high denominations. I'm talking, hold tens and twenties, not $100 bills. Have something you can break down.
If you look at the historically, let's type this in. I want to look at the planks of the Communist Manifesto. I didn't know which one it was. Oh, okay. I thought I was right in my head, but I wanted to make sure because I want to always be accurate as possible, especially on these shows. The fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto is a central bank. Okay. So, and if you look at the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, our leaders, our overlords have chosen them all because bankers mm-hmm. love communism. The richest people in the world, they love communism. It's great for them. People, you know, these idiots and wokies, and they're like, oh, we've got to fight the power and eat the rich. The rich fund you. That's mm-hmm. the way history works. I don't know why you can't see that, but that's what happens. That's where all your movements, you know, get all the funding from. So that we've adopted a central bank. It's part of the Communist Manifesto. And when I read those things about, like Jerome Powell, one of his quotes was, we don't think that we will cause a recession and we don't think we will have to.
But now we have to. And he.
But now we have to. And so the economy, when they're talking about labor markets and it's been too strong, we need to slow that down. So you need to slow down production for your bankster friends. We don't want this to get too hot. We don't want people to be doing too good because that hurts us. It devalues the dollar. We got problems in the world's reserve currency. So this is them sending a signal. And I don't think people are totally, you know, the financial markets act like this guy's a savior. It's going to help us. And I've thought for a while, I think they're going after saving the weaponization of the dollar and they're putting the economy second. And they've picked winners and losers already. And we're the losers. Sorry, spoiler alert. Anybody who's not connected to the criminal gang in the central banking elite in Wall Street is going to be left in the cold unless you understand what's coming. And again, this is something I want people to realize. Just because interest rates are only at 5% or whatever they are, and they're talking about raising them more, and you say, well, that's not historically that high. They've raised interest rates faster, though, than mm-hmm. any time in history. So it took Paul Volcker like five, six years.
Like every time that we've tried to raise interest rates, it breaks us. And they pull back only because they don't want that depression to happen. But we're to that point of, do you want runaway inflation and just a bunch of chaos? Or should we try to pull this back? I don't like Jerome Powell, but he's definitely got the impossible job. And I'm sure he's going to get a promotion whichever way that this goes. He'll just keep moving on up in this world. But the little people like us are definitely left behind. We feel the brute force from everything that happens within every decision there.
Most people in the 30s didn't know who the head of the Federal Reserve was.
Most people now probably don't know who Jerome Powell is.
Well, I mean, but in the financial, but yeah, when you talk about that, people wait on, like, people pay attention less to the president, I think, than the, because people know who runs the country now. It's like these unelected, you know, corporations and banking houses and multinationals. People know that now. So they say, oh, well, what's Jerome Powell going to do? Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to put the dollar first. He's going to put the banks first. And it's like you had Hoovervilles, you know, people blamed, you know, Herbert Hoover for the Depression. And it really was the Wall Street insiders. And then, you know, they'd sold stocks and put margin and, you know, and let people leverage things and all that. I mean, they knew exactly. It was a controlled demolition. They knew exactly what they were doing.
That sounds familiar. That sounds real. Oh, yeah.
And even Ben Bernanke, you know, who's head of the Fed for a while, said, yes, we know we caused the Great Depression, but we'll never do it again. You know, it's like they admit that the Fed was, you know, people blame tariffs. You know, if you walk off Ben Stein, who was a speechwriter for Nixon, and he had that show, Win Ben Stein's Money. But if you watch the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, he's given you a lecture of what caused the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And he says it was Smoot and Hawley. It was the tariffs that caused the Great Depression. And I thought that's such propaganda. Like in that movie, people are listening to that. So even the background, your mind's picking that up. But the Smoot and Hawley were not, that was the tariffs that they put on to try to keep to protect the home manufacturing market. You can argue economics, but that did not cause the Great Depression. The Federal Reserve did. It was the culprit, and Smoot and Hawley were framed. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that's if you don't stop me, I'll get off on a historical rant, Kinsey, and I think that's pretty evident from all the shows. And I appreciate everybody listening. Hey, do you want to go to the chat, Kinsey? Have you checked out the Rockfin chat?
I have. Well, I haven't checked out Rockfin. I was a.
Say again. It looks like We lost Kenzie's audio for just a second. She'll most likely come back, though. I was looking at the Rockfin chat. Somebody asked if Wolfpack was going to get those smaller gold coins. And the answer is yes. We have a significant amount of those half-gram sovereign gold coins. And those are from, I think there's some Cook Islands and the Isle of Man. We've got plenty of them in stock, and there's some going out today, and all Wolfpack categories are getting the gold today. And I did an Instagram post, talked about how, you know, the first tier, if you go to wolfpack.gold, folks, if you're finding this for the first time, we have a membership program that I think is pretty revolutionary as far as like what type of products we buy and what the purpose of it is in the system. And that's just like the purchasing. Now we have hundreds of members all over the country. So all of those people collectively combined allow me to get products that I normally wouldn't have gotten for a small amount of people. So anyway, we were able to get some gold this week, and I'm really proud of it because the lowest tier, the Lone Wolf tier at $50, was able to get gold. And I'm interested to see what happens when they get their invoice and they see that we lost some of money on it.
Yeah,
and it's okay because, I mean, we have so many other people in other tiers, and it was just something I'm like, let's reward that lowest tier. To say, hey, thank you. And that's really what that was. That was a thank
without
you
the without the strength of the pack that we have now, I just don't think that it would have been possible. You know, if we were talking about this a couple months ago, it would be very impossible. But we've been very careful on when we pick and choose to do our buy-ins for, you know, the orders that are going to go out, and just staying very conscientious of, you know, where we're at. And yeah, Tony kept asking, and I eventually was like, I think that we can do this. I broke the numbers down a little bit. You never really know until you do it. And I don't think it's going to hurt us too bad. And in the long run, I think that we'll be okay. But yeah, just thank you to everybody for all the support over there. It's fun to put those orders together and see all the nice comments that we get back on what you get as well.
Yeah, and this is just the beginning of Wolfpack. I flew down to Dallas yesterday. I finally, for the first time, this is how I am. Like I work, and I, even if I'm doing okay, I'm always skeptical. Like I've had times in the past where, you know, things are tight, so I just don't get a big head. But I finally, after the first time since I was 28 years old, I'm 43 now, I bought a new car. And, I sent off for it. It's not an expensive car, but I just wanted to get something that I wanted the way I wanted, the color and everything. So I finally did that. So I've been just, when I get out of town for a while, I can think better. So like I was flying yesterday, I was taking notes, and I've been thinking today, just on some of the stuff that I want to do for Wolfpack. And there's so much cool stuff. I want to get to where we can have like a referral program. You know, like if you tell a friend that, you know, we can throw a silver dollar in there or something like that, you know, like there's something where you can benefit from just helping us spread the word, like making it possible for you to, get some extra medals for just helping us out, sharing links and things like that. So I'll probably talk with Kenzie about that more, but that's been on my mind because, you know, what's happening, and when these banks and with the finance in general, is that we're going into a historical shift. I don't have all the answers, but I do know that in times of where there's a changeover in currency, you don't want to be holding the old currency, kind of like musical chairs, you know. And when all I know is that I just go by math and history, we're 5% of the world's population. We've been dominating the world, our hegemonic presence militarily. By the way, a military does not make a world domination, and we're losing the world's reserve currency. So the military knows that. That's why the Pentagon was running a simulation to fight Gen Z for Bitcoin. I mean, the Pentagon was actually running that simulation for a Gen Z Bitcoin revolt about 2 years ago. And I've talked about that because they understand how those things tie together. So we've got a 36 countries that we sanction. We got 40 sanctions economically on 36 different countries with the dollar. These countries are rebelling, and that's culminating in the BRICS nations, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Once they add Saudi Arabia, you're talking about like 40% of the world's population. The world doesn't like us. doesn't like the United States of America. And can you blame them with the type of people that run this place now? I mean, the leaders are so far removed from any of the people that are excellent in the real world and like actually keep the lights on and build things. We're not the same people. It's like two different classes. And I'm not betting. So, and as I opened up my show last week and said, the reason that I'm in the business that I'm in now, it's not that I love gold or I like coins. They're cool. I like the history. But I'm betting against this system. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting all the chips on the table. I'm betting against it. Honestly, I hope I'm wrong on some stuff because it's going to hurt people, but I don't think that I am. When it comes to reading quotes about the Fed, Kenzie, the language is clear. It's in their quotes. Like, we don't think we'll have to cause a recession. What do you mean you'll have to? What does that even mean? Like, isn't your job to make sure that we have a healthy economy, even though that's your stated mission? You can't do that. Only a free market, only a true free market with real rule of law and consequences can create a healthy economy. But you can have the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. I guess that's what the rulers really want. So I'm betting against the system. Wolfpack is a bet against the system, and it's also a way for people to connect. And anyway, I've said a lot of nice things about Kenzie on other podcasts that she hasn't heard. She's done a magnificent job with the purchasing of stuff for Wolfpack. She finds things that I can't find. If you call me to make an order, I had two calls today on the road. I said, let me get Kenzie to call you back because actually she'll find you better deals than me. So I'm glad she works at least in the sphere of where I am and not, she's not my competitor.
Yeah. Well, it's tough though, because even midday sometimes I'm not sure if it comes back to the original minter or the wholesale. Midday, they could change a premium on you on something. You go, whoa, that's not a good deal anymore. So you kind of got to switch in real time. They've been doing that with two different sovereigns on me here lately, Tony, and that's fine. Another point, I was talking to you on the phone about this the other day. You can buy sovereigns right now for the price that people were paying for generic rounds a couple months ago. Don't be the person that's like, oh, I only buy cheap silver. I just want it as cheap as possible. That is cool. And you can do that. But now is a great opportunity to be able to get back into some sovereign coinage, or even if you still just want to stick to rounds. But don't be upset a couple months or a while down the road from now, whenever you're buying those generic coins for, you know, that $28 to $30 range, or who knows, even higher if things get a little bit crazy. And I wanted to bring up silver price historically today and throughout different times in history, because it would not be our number one concern. You guys know that I never try to push collector anything on you, but I've got some collector stuff where you would go, you're stupid for buying that. And I might be, but you know what? I like the shiny and I don't care about the premium. It's a very small portion of my portfolio, but I like the shiny. That's it.
I just don't think any of the things are real. Like, I'm talking about the premiums. And the reason I say that is because it's estimated. No one truly knows about the COMEX and the paper markets and the ETFs. Nobody really knows, but it's estimated that for every ounce of silver that's sold, there's every 240 ounces on these exchanges, there's only one physical ounce that exists in reality.
Yeah.
So we really don't know where the premium should be. So like, if you're looking at a beautiful coin, if it's reasonable, you know, that's something you should, you know, consider. I just think the whole point of where we are now and trying to explain in this show, like historically, and we only got like a couple minutes left, is that, like, you know, I found out just recently, I was reading a book and it was like, why did they peg silver 16, 17 to one, you know, for the first, you know, 150 years of our existence in this country? And why was that pretty much the standard around the world? It was geologically the estimated difference in amount of like silver to gold ratio, like in the earth. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that. To do with economics. So even we learn something, you know, we try to learn something every day in this business. But so if you look at that just historically, and I'll let you close out, Kenzie, historically, silver is super cheap right now because it's like, what is the, I don't have a calculator, but it's got to be like 80 to to 90 to 1.
The ratio is 90 to 1. Yeah.
Yes, 90. Yeah. So historically, it's been 16, between 10 to 16 to 20. And I mean, now we're just off the charts. At one time, you know, then in 2020, it was like 125. So yeah, we're just, it's insane. And I'll let you have final thoughts on this as we close out.
Oh, it's absolutely crazy. Something that we haven't mentioned, and I don't want people to get too excited about, but there's a lot of talk. Elon Musk himself said that he might have to buy a silver mine or hold a massive ton of shares in silver mines that are already out there. And we're talking about some of the largest mines in the world, production-wise. And he has to do that because of this green future that they want to have for us, because it doesn't keep going without these precious metals. If suppliers like that actually start, instead of using that middleman of the COMEX and using futures contracts, and they're going directly to the source, you had better believe there's going to be an issue getting silver for retail markets. Or, you know, I say retail, but realistically, that's our hedge against inflation. And the only way for me to buy it is through a retail market. So something to consider. Don't get too excited, though. I don't know what kind of tricks they could pull. I don't know what they're trying to do now. That would just be a huge thing if Elon got into silver. He is considering that.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that story. I think that's going to be a real big shift here in the future. And silver is just kind of in a holding pattern. I think that's why the big banks know that. I think why they've been accumulating. Oh, yeah. And I think that's why the price is where it's at. So, hey, folks, we'll be back next week. Again, if you're finding this on any of my other podcast channels, go find Kenzie and I on the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show. You can find us at wisewolfgoldandsilver.com or wolfpack.gold and Twitter handle at wisewolfgold on Twitter. And usually Kenzie's tweeting out there as she was before we started the show. And I just want to say thank you to everybody who joined in on Rockfin. And on the America Unplugged channel. So anyway, we'll be back next week, and I'll have all new radio shows, all that cool stuff. In a world of bulls and bears, be the wolf. We'll see you next time. End of transmission.
Bye, guys.